Hello, everyone. We welcome you to our Sunday morning roundtable. Today is Sunday, September 16th, 2018. We are recording from the Plainfield Christian Science Church, Independent, Plainfield, New Jersey, the United States of America. And we will begin this morning with our prayer. Lauren.
Okay. From Mrs. Eddy's prayer given at the Massachusetts Metaphysical College. O my God, I offer as a consecrated gift upon thine altar a heart dedicated to thy service, lips speaking only words of charity, love, and truth, thoughts striving to be only the true thoughts of the mind of God. Help me to endure unto the end, strong in the faith, powerful in the truth, all the influence that I can bring to bear, all the force of tongue or pen that is mine, I offer in thy service. May heaven help, consecrate, and accept.
Thank you. And from Miscellaneous Writings, Mary Baker Eddy. We today in this classroom are enough to convert the world if we are of one mind, for then the whole world will feel the influence of this mind, as when the earth was without form, and mind spake, and form appeared. Our subject today is matter. Golden text, Zechariah. Be silent, O all flesh, before the Lord. Now, yesterday, many of you missed our Bible study. Please listen to it. It was very important on the casting out demons, handling demons. In this week's lesson, there are two so-called miracles. We know they're not miracles, they're natural occurrences, healing power of God. The first being the Christ who stopped the storm, and then the second, where he healed the man possessed with demons, legion. And as was talked about yesterday, we as Christian scientists need to know how to do this work for ourselves and for the world. Now, there's been a building up, so to speak, a crescendo. We've talked in the recent past about, well, the disobedience of the BOD, disobeying Mrs. Eddy's estoppel clauses, the manual, and also the lack of recognizing who she is as the woman in the apocalypse. Now, as we are growing and straightening these thoughts, putting them in their right place, and knowing the truth about it, it unleashes a great power. Mrs. Eddy says that. Mrs. Eddy says knowing who and what she is will do more for the cause of science than anything else. So when you don't, you disobey her, and you don't see her as a woman in the apocalypse, it's weakened. It's weakened the work. So we are reestablishing that. And how do we do it? We can't go around and force everybody else to think the way we do. We do it in our own consciousness and how we see it, what we know to be the truth, and by living that. As was discussed, Suzanne brought it up, and I was very glad because the major point about yesterday with the man with the demon. Okay, that was how it was described in those ancient times. But what did you say about now, Suzanne?
About what? I'm sorry.
Well, about bringing it
mental into illness.
Yeah, about today, mental illness.
Oh yeah, just how everyone's talking about mental illness being a number one problem with guns and this and that, but if we don't go to God and know it's there's one mind and we're all ideas of the one mind, that is the only way to solve this mental illness problem in this country. We have to go to God.
Yes, and in doing this work, and we cannot be remiss in it, this is going to heal the opioid problem, the other urgent problems, this rampant suicide that's going on, the problems with our youth. But you can't ignore it or just think, well, I'm going to work on my own problems. You do work on your own problems, yes, but then you include the world in this work, as we've been taught. And as you do that, your own problems become unwound and unsnarled, as Mrs. Eddy says, as well. Because it is a greater work in many ways, but it has to be done. And if we don't do it, I don't know who's going to do it. And I don't know what other answers or solutions there are to this problem, as Suzanne just said. It's only in God. And in doing, and this is in this week's lesson on matter. So in healing these cases and realizing the unreality of this, we are realizing the unreality of a belief that there's power in matter and that it controls us. So today we're going to get deeper into this understanding of handling the weather. We had a whole week of working on this. Before I get into it, any comments or anything anyone wants to say? Okay. Well, we had a very good forum on this, on the weather. Quotes from both Mary Baker Eddy and also Carpenter. Ray quoted Mary Baker Eddy, her Spiritual Footsteps, on page 272. I believe this is chapter 62, and that whole chapter deals with handling the weather. If you're not familiar with it, become familiar with it. If you're not familiar with what Mrs. Eddy says in Watches, Prayers, and Arguments, which is quoted throughout the forum, become familiar with it. Now, Carpenter brings out an interesting point in this chapter. He talks about the positive and the negative. He said that someone was looking out the window and saw a dog chasing a cat. That's usually how it goes, right? Dogs chase cats. But then the cat came upon an automobile. So the cat suddenly turned around and started chasing the dog. So what do you think the dog did? He ran. He ran. And then he compares this to a faucet in a sink. Now, the water comes from the faucet, and where does it go?
Down
the drain. So, when you think that you lack power, you are like that. You become a negative sink, and everything pours into you. Like the cat, you're running from the dog all the time until just accidentally the cat realized when it confronted the dog and chased the dog ran. Now, what are we told in the first chapter of Genesis?
God gave man dominion.
Thank you, Bruce. That's what I was looking for. He gave you dominion over what?
Everything.
Does that include the weather? Yes. It comes only by reflection. Does that include demons?
Yes.
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 You have been given dominion over everything. But do we know it or do we use it? Now, in the Bible, there are all these stories, aren't there? Many stories of the healing of weather. Elijah, Elisha, Christ, Moses, about all of them. But I have read, and I that most Christians, well, they say the weather, okay, Jesus could do that, but we don't go there. I don't know of any other religions that do this. I mean, I do know of Indians and rain dances and that kind of thing. But this is something we need to take on like a mantle that gets given to us. Because if you realize that you have the power, you will be able to achieve wonderful great things. We've only just scratched the surface. Now, what is the main thing we have to keep in mind with this, accepting this dominion and power? What do we have to remember more than anything else?
God's absolute allness, yes.
Yes, we have to remember it is God's power. And being God's power, what? It's used only for what purpose?
Good.
Good.
If you don't know that, then forget about it. Now, Carson investigates a lot of things, and he knows. He sent me a YouTube on something. It was called Etheric Weather Engineering. He's also talked to me about something called HAARP technology, H-A-A-R-P. You can Google these things if you so choose. And in that, it's human engineering of the weather. Now, I'm sure it has started in the purpose of good, but it's still human, isn't it? It's not based on anything divine. And, I mean, he has said we have to be Parthians. It gets into the wrong hands, which it could easily do. It could be disastrous. And we're not even sure if perhaps it hasn't. We know that nations, including America, Europe, China, already does this type of thing. Well, I don't know what they fly in the air and drop seeds and cause rain or cause other things. But it could make things worse rather than better. And we're not sure with this huge storm that was going on all week if some of that wasn't going on. If we keep having these huge storms battering our country, costing billions and billions of dollars, besides all the tragedy that it causes for people, which is a lot, what else will it do?
Bankrupt.
It will bankrupt us. That is why we cannot sit idly by and let these sort of things go on. And I know, you know, at times, well, maybe we've had one watch. Well, this week we had like three watches. we kept at it. And whether we have a watch or not, you are to keep at it with any of these things. And this includes fires in California, earthquakes, and all of this. It's not just a matter of throwing out a good thought. I felt all week I was Indian arm wrestling. I don't know if I should have felt that way, but that's how I felt. I felt like I had to keep at it. Besides that, all the publicity that it gets, which Parthians is very well spoken to, which balloons it in everyone's eyes, we can be grateful for the warnings. That's a great thing. We can be grateful that looks like something's coming. That's a good thing. But then when they just go on and on and on, well, then it becomes a bad thing. So we get deeper into this understanding, and one of the things that Ray wrote about was from Carpenter. It is a self-evident proposition that the student cannot possibly work on the weather selfishly. He cannot pray for a private rainfall or fair weather any more than he can open a private door in heaven through which God will pour a personal blessing. Because the door to God's blessing is a universal door which opens for all. Heaven in the heart of one means heaven in the heart of all, is the beautiful way Mrs. Eddy once expressed this ideal to me. Handling the weather scientifically is one of the best methods of restoring man to his rightful place, which the thought of weakness, subjection, and fear has taken from him. For it gives him a glimpse of his infinite possibilities and his need of using them, so that wisdom and love may again be present in cause and be demonstrated by man under the government of God. Then they will express themselves in effect. You cannot ever work selfishly for your own little area. When you pray on the weather, you pray for good weather for all mankind, and you always leave it to God. God knows what man needs. We don't. Don't outline. When some of you have the memoirs of Mary Baker Eddy by Adam Dickey, and he speaks of when he went to Mrs. Eddy's home. It was in early February, very, very cold. He took those days, you know, it was sleds because there was a lot of snow. There was a big snowstorm throughout the country. He was to arrive sometime in the afternoon. He didn't get there till 11. And when he got there, the workers in the home, including Calvin Fry, spoke to him about the weather. And it was made very clear that Mrs. Eddy never accepted extremes in weather, and that she had at least one person in her home working daily on the weather. So my question is to you. Well, you don't have to answer. But if you don't, perhaps you should. And because it's easy when we get a report of a bad storm coming, we all work. But why not work always on it? Every day. It doesn't take all that time. We're always thinking things. So let's know God's control of the weather for your community and for all communities. Let's take up this work as it was done in Mrs. Eddy's home. If it was important then, do you not think it's important now? Parthens wrote something to me which I thought was very good. He texted me. He said, "I will keep watching and praying regarding flood belief, that the face of our Heavenly Father removes all traces of belief in the existence of hurricanes." Think about that. The face of our Heavenly Father removes all traces of belief in the existence of hurricanes. He says Hurricane Florence. We can say hurricane in general. May she fizzle out and be cast into her nature oblivion. And then he says, tongue in cheek, and may the media weep in bitter, abject consternation. He sent me, and someone else sent me too, that little video of a reporter down south. What was he doing, Bruce?
Well, this reporter was going to be aired on public television, acting like he could barely stand up because of the force of the wind. And during this acting job, two guys walked behind him just normally, like it was just a calm breeze instead of a fierce storm.
And the person who took the video commented on, gee, this guy's having a problem, but look at the two people behind him. They don't seem to have a problem. And made the comment, and this is what is wrong with our media.
Yeah, I saw one where the guy was waist deep in water, but the cameramen were just standing up, maybe, you know, in a pinch of water. The guy just found some big puddle to get in.
You know, the mind that beholds the storm is in the storm. So.
Thank you. And, you know, Florence's readings were so perfect for Wednesday. Be thou my vision, O Lord, my heart. What are we beholding? What are we seeing? This is where the dominion, where the strength is in that. What are we seeing? That's why we do need to know what's going on. But for the most part, keep it turned off, television or anything of that sort. So Carpenter also says this. It must be thoroughly understood that man, as divine love created him, is God's representative, or the channel through which the power of God flows out into the universe. And without man, God would no more be operative than would be the laws of the nation without representatives to enforce them. First chapter in Genesis says, let us make man in our image after our likeness, and let them have dominion. Thus, man reflecting God is Lord of the objective universe. Through mortal mesmerism, man has been induced to accept the suggestion that the laws of nature have supremacy over the laws of God, with the consequence that, as science and health says, and this is a quote, man becomes the most absolutely weak and inharmonious creature in the universe. Thus, man is tricked into sitting by and believing that since the control of all external effects has been taken out of his hands, he is perfectly powerless in his own universe. What must one do to regain his birthright of supremacy? Must he not recognize his dominion over the universe as the Son of God, and then establish himself as a channel so that the normal government of the universe by the divine power he reflects will become an evident fact? But then he warns, in this process there is the danger that mortal man will attempt to resume a place of control without putting off a human sense and taking on the divine mind. That's the danger. That's the danger of human do-goody. Not divine. Mrs. Eddy foresaw such a situation. She unfolds it on page 96 of Science and Health. She writes of conflicting forces, discord, and dismay, but adds that those who discern Christian Science will what?
Climb in check.
Will climb in check. She says, in handling the weather, she tells you can do it. If you're not first successful, do not get discouraged. Keep on working on it. And you know, we all have ample opportunity to work on these things, don't we?
Yes. Yes.
Carpenter also says working on these things are your own life insurance. If you're working on it, how can it hit you? You're realizing it's unreality. So it can hit you when you are actively working on it. This is the importance of the watches. This was what will heal all your troubles. Forgetting self and working for mankind. Unselfed love is our most recent liberator. It's about. So let's take this mantle and do the work daily and not forget to do it, not be made to forget or to neglect our duty to God, our leader, and mankind. And in doing this work, it's preventative as well as curative. We can prevent it. Who knows what we have prevented? We'll never know what's been prevented. There are some, you know, things, and I talked about it yesterday, that, you know, maybe we can't, or maybe we will just lessen the blow as we did this time and in other storms. Sometimes people need to learn lessons, and we can't try to get in their way and...
And the regulator,
yeah. Because ultimately, what do disasters do to people?
Bring them to God.
Yeah.
Wake them up.
They wake them up. Because they do feel helpless. They feel helpless. And in that feeling helpless, they turn to God. And that's always a good thing. But we can protect the innocent. We can lessen the blow. It can help in many ways. And as we did this week, because you know what was predicted. I sometimes look at the Christian broadcast network. And the list of things that they say are going on is like Armageddon. Just one thing after the next, like, oh my gosh. So, we are here now at this point with this understanding to do this work and to do it with joy and love and unselfless love. Anyone else? Elizabeth, did you want to say anything today, or you don't have to if you don't want to?
No, I'll wait. Thanks.
Okay. anyone?
I just wanted to say about having to learn lessons. I know right before coming here, I had a very firm awareness that everything I knew, all the tools I had were completely useless. And I'm very glad for that. I'm very glad I got to that state, because now being here, I never think, oh man, I wish I could go back and like try that.
One thing that's helped me a lot is from the hymn, "An atmosphere of love divine, we live and move and breathe." Something comes up like this storm, it's important to remember that the supposed extremity is really malicious thought, and the uncontrolled human mind wants to dramatize and amplify this malice. We need to counteract it with something that's godlike, like "in atmosphere of love divine, we live and move and breathe." So this malice that would like to drive this is facing against divine love.
Thank you.
Divine love is power. Divine power. Another thing storms like this do is they bring people together to help each other. That's a little more closely resembles divine love than the so-called malice that would like to whip things around.
Yeah, because, you know, all of this stuff that precedes these storms, often all this fighting, arguing, hate on both sides, the political stuff that goes on, all of that gets put aside. Who has time to be fighting with your neighbor when you're helping your neighbor? That's the truth about man. It's almost a cleansing effect. If it takes that, it takes it. But
So be it.
But that's why we should always be handling malice that he talks about and taking offense, neutralizing what is bitter in the world. What did you write on the forum, Carol?
As I was working for it, the thought came to me that this is a storm of discontent. And that storm has no power. It can't coordinate. And it has to be just blown apart. And that's what it took, to blow it apart.
All the thoughts of forum were excellent. We'll save it. We have had a cornerstone on the weather, but we probably in the future will have a liberator, love is the liberator, on the weather again, because it's ongoing. There is also something unique that Mrs. Eddy recognized in handling the weather as compared to, say, handling physical problems. What is it? Well, in handling the weather, you're not dealing with people or personalities. And she knew that it was a good training ground for all kinds of work. So,
it means the impersonalized error.
Impersonalized error, yeah. I will say, when Storm Sandy hit the Northeast a few years ago, we've never had a storm like that. And being in the middle of it, I had never realized or experienced that kind of malice. It was as if it wasn't a storm. It was just rank malice, hate, just bearing down. And in many ways, it was good for me to see, you know, not be so dumb or naive as to what error tries to do, or what it tries to do to so many others, not have the compassion for it, and to stand strong in it, and see the face of God above those clouds, see his loving face, and know that he reigns supreme. And as we do this work, we will, yes, handle the demons, all these things that came to the Christ. We have to be able to. This is the only answer, as Suzanne so well said. There is no other answer. All these human ways, you know, whatever, gun control or this human engineering of the weather, whatever they're trying to do, only God is the answer. So, and I feel in many ways we're being trained for what comes next, because we don't know what will come next. That movie, I've never seen it, but I've heard the title, Guardians of the Galaxy. So, accept your assignment.
Well, things are relative because, for me, this is next. Because I don't remember. I mean, there was always a storm here or there, but I don't remember the number. And I think what's so incredible about the power of Christian Science is that all the billions of people thinking malicious thoughts that probably are an impetus to create these hurricanes, etc. The few that are truly working with God, and I wish I could say I was one of them, but I do my best. But anyways, so to dissipate, like the numbers have been dissipated over the time I've been here at Plainfield, it's just very impressive.
Thank you.
You know, it's interesting that you bring out how Mrs. Eddy talked about we can work impersonally on weather since they give these storms names now, even the winter storms. That
That's true. Like
they want you to think of it as a person.
Yes. And I did hear, too, that the storms have actually lessened in intensity over the years. So recently, the storms have lessened in intensity, and they've lessened in number, which, you know, our work is effective.
And it will continue to be.
Yep.
It's good to hear.
Mm-hmm. And we do. We have to remember, because it's easy. Well, if it's not in my area, well, you know, I don't really care too much. We have to care wherever it is. If you have that attitude, it will be in your area, okay? Don't go there. You handle it. You have to. That's the compassion for your brother, wherever it is. And I was talking to Gary this morning, too, this idea of, well, you're going to move some safe place where this doesn't happen. Again, my ha-ha-ha-ha. I don't know where any of this stuff isn't happening. Something's happening. You can't run from it. You've got to stand, just like the cat who chased the dog. You can't be running, or you'll be running forever. That shows fear. What should be your motive for where you live?
To bless
you to be. Yes, to bless where God wants you to be. It doesn't matter what the taxes are, what the climate is, what the school system is. Where does God want you? That is the only criteria. Pardon me?
No, I said where he wants you to be.
Where he wants you to be. I hear it all the time. People are, oh, I got to move. Or this happened in so-and-so place, so I'm going to move somewhere else. And, you know, there, I've read these stories or seen them. I haven't bothered to read them. But, you know, somebody moved from somewhere to someplace else, and then there was something else going on. Heal it in your thinking.
Yeah. Well, you're moving with the same thinking, so what
right.
difference does it make?
You're going to take it with you. Heal it in your own thought.
I did hear that one woman in one of the Carolinas had been in Katrina. And
yes.
She moved here, and now she got this one.
Yep. They think, well, I won't be on the coast, I'll go in the mountains. So now the mountains have mudslides and torrential rain. I don't know. You can't figure on that kind of thing. It's where God wants you. And if God wants you somewhere and something comes up, well, you can stand and face it.
I grew up in California, and we had a lot of rattlesnakes, scorpions around. And then we moved to Massachusetts and had, you know, a lot of snow and zero weather. And I remember telling my dad, I don't know which is worse.
Right, well, that's it. It's, what, 6 to 1 and half dozen of another. So, where God wants you to be, that beautiful hymn, steady.
Matters not what be thy lot, so love doth guide.
Thank you. Or shine, your peace is mine, whate'er be time.
And sometimes, when you work through a situation where you live, you'll find yourself easily moving to another, to the next place that you need to be.
That's it. And you will have overcome what you need to. So if God lifts you somewhere else, that's fine. And, you know, through Storm Sandy, I know all of us here were protected, everyone. And we didn't miss the church service. We had generator.
Yeah, we broadcast the service. The trees around us did not come down.
That's how it will be. There's a beautiful story, you know, the earthquake, forget the year, but does anyone remember? It was like 1904 or 6 or something. Anyway, there was a practitioner working in San Francisco, and everything came down all around her, and her house was untouched. But she knew it so strongly. So don't be part of the mesmerism. Don't let it pull you in and get you thinking that it's true and real and you're just helpless. I loved what Parsons wrote. I only need compare the hurricane size with the size of God, the boundless magnitude of the power of God, the all-transforming energy of the omniactive activity of God, that overrules and nullifies the existence of all storms, the infinite immensity of the presence of God, which dwarfs the size of the universe itself, as David did with Goliath. So I must remember that one with God is a majority, and carry out an inspired watch, waiting, and if necessary, tarrying long in God's presence, stopping only as the Spirit leads. I told him he waxes eloquent.
He
does. And that's because his heart is so in it. And I don't know if I told you this story, but he said as a very little boy, like 4 or 5, he had a dream in a classroom that a big grizzly bear came in and was attacking the children. And he got up and confronted the bear. And his next part of the dream was he was in a hospital, but everything was okay, and he was safe, and the children were safe. And he said ever since that, he felt it was his calling to love and protect children. And he has done so many different ways. So when you have that deep desire within you to bless others, God uses you in wondrous ways, and he certainly has used Arthur to help this cause. And his beautiful writings and watches are part of it, as does he use all of you, because he does. Some in very quiet ways.
Everybody in their right place.
Yes, living stones, we each in our place, and all loved and appreciated by us, certainly by God. All right, so now we will go forth and be wonderful workers for God with the weather, and we can get to a little bit of the lesson, the time we have left. Then we will go into science and health. And Jeffrey, you can read number 2 for us.
The realm of the real is spirit. The unlikeness of spirit is matter, and the opposite of the real is not divine. It is a human concept. Matter is an error of statement. This error in the premise leads to errors in the conclusion in every statement into which it enters. Nothing we can say or believe regarding matter is immortal. Matter is temporal and is therefore a mortal phenomenon, a human concept, sometimes beautiful, always erroneous.
Thank you. Any comments on that?
I used to not like that sentence at all when I read it. For a long time. I felt like, what? How could that be? But now, as I've come to understand the spiritual reality of things, I find it to be a very reassuring statement.
Yes.
This is one of the hardest concepts in Christian Science for anybody to accept, the unreality of matter. It is so in our face, 24/7. The human mind looks at that and says, what? That's ridiculous. But I remember Mr. Evans gave some of us an assignment many, many years ago to look up everything Mrs. Eddy ever wrote about materialism, materiality, and to come up with what we believe materialism or materiality is. So we spent weeks coming up with this, and we all got together and gave our thoughts. And at the end of it, Mr. Evans said, well, it's really quite simple. Materialism is merely the wrong way to look at anything. Goes to Lawrence's readings on Wednesday. It's bad vision. It's looking with your eyes but not seeing what's really there.
Do any of you remember last week we ended from Big Nell Young, if you say I want? The last statement was someone saying the problem always seems to be that everywhere around us is matter, that's all we can see. And the answer was?
Spirit is all you ever can see. It's impossible to see anything else.
That's a beautiful thought. So, as we see with our spiritual senses, as we see what God is, see Him everywhere. He's all in all, the beginning, the first. Carol, you want to read number one in Science and Health?
There is no life, truth, intelligence, nor substance in matter. All is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation. For God is all in all. Spirit is immortal truth. Matter is mortal error.
God is all in all. It's really the end of the That's how Mrs. Eddy could look at a storm and see the face of God.
Well, I know when I often look out over the beauty of nature, the beautiful trees waving in the wind, and I understand it's all spiritual. It's God's love and beauty. It's glory.
Thank you. Absolutely.
I think there's more appreciation. I feel more appreciation since this view of seeing things not as material, but, you know, the spirit behind all of it, the truth of all of it. Just everything just feels and seems more, even more beautiful with that thought.
Yes. And you see, that's different than this statement where it says sometimes beautiful, always erroneous. Because you can see, and I'm sure, you know, the things that people consider beautiful, well, it's, when it's godless, it's not beautiful. It is erroneous. And there's a difference. There's a difference. So,
when you see it as spiritual, it has a different essence. I mean, it just makes an entire difference in how you view it.
Right, it does. And as you keep doing this, the earth weights drop away, and your whole body is going to feel. You know, you think, well, you're just matter and you've got all these pains and everything else. Well, as you keep doing this day by day, realizing you're but the humble servant of the restful mind, all the limitations and everything else, they just drop away. And you don't feel so encumbered by this so-called materiality. It becomes less and less. You're absent from the body and present with the Lord. What really traps people is when you just focus on matter. I'm going to the gym today. I'm taking all these medications. I'm doing this. I'm doing that. It's all about you, matter, how to build it up. It's godless. And instead of building it up, well, you are building it up. You're not. It becomes more and more real. I know of someone who, you know, she was so shocked, and she was a Christian Scientist. Her father wasn't, but her father did everything, you know, worked out, ate the best food, did everything right, according to that. Was he a loving, good man? Not much. And he ended up, you know, getting ill and dying, and she was, how could that happen when he followed all the rules, the medical rules? Yeah, which rule? There's only one. The divine laws and rules of the universe. And I've found it interesting. Do we ever know if Mrs. Eddy exercising? I mean, I don't. She took a afternoon carriage ride. But they said she was lovely.
One of the things I read here, and she was in her 80s, and she was delivering a sermon, and she had to go up these steps to the back so she could get up and see everybody. She ran up the steps.
Yes. Yes. She had lovely skin, bright eyes, and that, I don't think who wrote it, but he interviewed her for the next friend's suit, and he said how absolutely lovely and beautiful. Bright eyes. She could read fine print without glasses. She was all of that. All that the medical law say you can't do, but she did. Because she lived in the spirit. So this is how we take these things and know it is all in all. See spiritually with your spiritual sense. All things beautiful. And so, therefore, right in the middle of a storm or a person with demons, you can see, you can focus, you can see right there is the very presence and power of God, because that is all there is. So you can remain unmoved by the material picture. And Mrs. Eddy says we must be calm. Scientists are to be calm in that kind of a situation. So yesterday we read Ways That Are Vain, and this is in Chapter 10 in Miscellany, Admonition and Counsel. These are two, the other, I call it the yin and the yang. The other two ways that are vain is, this tells you, Ways That Are Vain tells you what starts demons, what it is, starts to take you over if you don't watch. What our leader says tells you what you should be doing, and we'll end with that.
What our leader says, beloved Christian Scientists, keep your mind so filled with truth and love that sin, disease, and death cannot enter them. It is plain that nothing can be added to the mind already full. There is no door through which evil can enter, and no space for evil to fill in a mind filled with goodness. Good thoughts are an impervious armor. Clad therewith, you are completely shielded from the attacks of error of every sort. And not only yourselves are safe, but all whom your thoughts rest upon are thereby benefited. The self-seeking pride of the evil thinker injures him when he would harm others. Goodness involuntarily resists evil. The evil thinker is the proud talker and doer. The right thinker abides under the shadow of the Almighty. His thoughts can only reflect peace, goodwill towards men, health, and holiness.
The mighty power. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.